This is the Roaring Autumn Podcast. And we're back today with the ultimate, final, everything coming together episode on what does it make to become a successful open source company. And in this episode, Dave is going to tell you all the secrets and give you an A to Z plan on how to do it.
Oh, if only. I think, if either of us knew the actual answer to this, spoiler alert.
We start a podcast. That's why you told me we start a podcast and then 10 years later, we're millionaires. That's why you promised me.
Right. Okay. I'm pretty sure that was not the promise. Anyway.
Strong beer.
Yeah. I managed to wonderfully butcher a phrase earlier on the previous episode. My only real answer to this is and I'll try and get it right this time, cash is king, but profitability is freedom. So it's not a proper answer, because the next question is, well, how do you make an open source company profitable? And that I can't say. But the whole thing, like having, you know, cash reserves and all that sort of thing is definitely very important. Make sure that your company can survive all sorts of challenges and headwinds and other craziness going on out in the world that you maybe have little control over. But the phrase profitability is freedom is about the ability, or recognizing the ability, for your organization to actually successfully generate income. And it signifies that your business has a long-term long-term health and sustainable, and should allow for you to reinvest that money back into the organization, continue to grow, and even further withstand any economic downturns and all those sorts of things. So, you know, it's the phrase "cash is king, profitability is freedom," I think embodies what everybody tries to get to, but it's hard. It's really difficult. And even if you have a incredibly popular, widely used by anyone and everyone open source project, that does not guarantee that you will be able to. You're probably able to get to the cash is king bit, because you can do a whole load of fundraising, you can do an IPO, all those sorts of things. But it doesn't guarantee you'll get that second bit of cash flow break even and then profitability.
Yes, and in the, let's call it semi-recent past, companies that have tried and gotten into the same kind of shoes as HashiCorp, well, the two solutions that they kind of found were either get acquired, which happens for a lot of open source companies. I mean, the big three are buying left, right, and center, and a lot of merging is happening all the time, which is not by itself a bad thing. Or you change your license. And before we record this episode, with a quick search on the internet, it's just, okay, which are the companies that went from an open source license to a less open source license, be it SSPL, BSL, whatever, not going into details here. And we came up with MongoDB, MariaDB, CockroachDB, and Elastic and Redis also went that way. And yeah, that is one way to do it. The problem is that whenever a company does this, they get a huge backlash, because you were open source, you promised us so much, and now you're no longer open source. You lied to us, how dare you? But yeah, if you look at HashiCorp, yes, they're with IBM now for a couple of years. It'll take a while to see how this evolves further, obviously. But I don't think anybody can say that one or the other is the best solution, because in the end, HashiCorp also is no longer open source, because the move to IBM was preceded, I think, by a move to a BSL semi-open source license. So even going to a closed source license doesn't always work. And we do have recently some proof that a move to a non-open source license can actually fix things. Again, future is unknown, But Elastic obviously went from a open source closer to open source, and now, like 2 weeks ago from when we record this, Redis also reversed their open source to non-open source back into open source again. And looking at Redis, it might just be that they were able to become profitable, or at least manageable, losing money over the time that they went to closed source license, got stability, and now can go open source again. I also think that 10 years ago, this was less of a problem because there were no hyperscalers. The hyperscalers have made things a lot harder, because when we did a little list here, they're all databases. Mongo, Maria, Cockroach, Elastic Redis, they're all databases. And just seeing that, yes, it's very easy to make a SaaS solution around an open source database software package, because you take the package, you put it on a VM, and you make a username login, and then tell the people you can use this database, and you pay me X per minute, X per byte, X per whatever. These are things that need to be up all the time. And that's the good thing for a hyperscaler, because VMs, they don't really like, because VMs are built to be down as much as possible and only up when you actually need them. But a database, well, once your data is in there, you can't really shut the database down. It needs to be up and running all the time. And well, if you're going to put it up, you're going to use it as well. So you will get, from a hyperscaler point of view, you get revenue. Mm. A lot of the time in the past, these companies did not get any kind of cashback from the hyperscalers, which really ate into their profitability potential. So going closed source, or at least the BSL and SSPL kind of thing, they're not totally closed source, but you're not allowed to put a SaaS service on it without having a professional commercial relationship with the technology provider, which in the olden days made total sense. If I make something and you want to resell that, you have a reseller agreement. The hyperscalers were able to grow as fast as they did because they were able to bypass that. And I'm not singling out Amazon, because Amazon is by far the worst offender here, but Google and Azure have done the same things. Azure, I think, is one of the better ones at this moment. And the reason I say that is because I was inside Microsoft, so I know more about it. So it's more of a decision due to ignorance and not because of knowledge, but they have decided more on the let's merge and join and help. Because of that, Amazon, Google also have going on. I think Google is kind of the worst at the moment, not because they do the grab software and make money from it without giving back, but because they usually build things internally themselves, which they make SaaS services on, or acquire companies and build SaaS services on top of that. But they've never been that much of a let's grab technology from somewhere else and make money around it, because they always felt they could do it better. Which again, better for worse, it's one way to do it. So it's not a problem there. But Amazon, by definition, I think history has proven that Amazon has done some very dirty deeds, but in recent years has also kind of converted to a more sustainable business relationship with these things. I mean, at some point, even the hyperscalers need to realize that if they don't let these open source projects survive, they will also lose out, because it has been proven in the past that Amazon doesn't contribute that much, and if they fork a project, sure, they survive, but it's not like they have the same, what's the word I'm looking for, popularity, innovation, momentum behind it, because it's not what Amazon does. And they have good people at Amazon. We're not talking about the people here, it's about the company structure. They were never an open source company ever. They're a closer. They don't have that same look at it. They look at it from the enterprise, definitely not the startup point of view, and that is not a problem, but different.
Yeah. We had a particular sort of example of this going, a license change, and in this case, change of ownership going horribly wrong pretty recently.
Yeah, this definitely is a tale of how not to do it.
Yeah. So you may or may not be familiar with the NATS project, NATS. It's part of, it's under the CNCF umbrella. It was donated a good few years ago to the CNCF by Its original company, Synadia, I think it's pronounced, not quite sure, but let's go with that. You know, fairly recently, within a few weeks of at least when we're recording this, Synadia decided that they wanted it all back. Yes, they wanted the domain name back, the GitHub repository and all the assets and all the community infrastructure. They wanted it all back because they decided they wanted to take back ownership. And boy howdy, let me tell you, that was not a wise move there. You can see if you're following on YouTube the blog post on the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation website, detailing the response of the CNCF, which was basically, we're happy to discuss, but no way. And thankfully, within, I would say, about a sort of less than 2 weeks for sure, I think might have even been within a week, Synadia had indeed, I would say backed down. I'm sure they would say negotiated agreement with the CNCF and all the bad things that they were threatening. Turns out none of those things are going to happen, and the Nats.io project will continue under the CNCF umbrella, and Synadia and the CNCF are friends, holding hands once more. Maybe.
Kumbaya.
Yeah. I mean, there have been many organizations, we don't need to rehash this, that have gone through license changes to OSI approved licenses. Some of them have gone well. License changes as a whole, I suppose, not just talking about the non-OSI approved, but like some of them go well, some of them are well handled, well executed. Some of them go very, very wrong, and you know, there's a lot of backlash. But the thing I would say is there's always going to be people that are going to be very vocal about this. You know, you've got the vocal minority and the silent majority, and that's just the way that these things worked. And sometimes the percentage split between those two groups might be fractionally different. You might have a slightly larger vocal minority on some issues than you do on others, but it generally speaking will still be the minority. And you know, the majority of people, majority of organizations won't necessarily care, but they won't care enough to speak up. And typically, those people that do are speaking up, in the most part, out of anger and frustration.
You know, well, it's not controversial to scream, "I agree." It's much more controversial to scream, "It's horrible, world on fire." Mm-hmm. It's the internet for you. But Synadia thing was more than just a license change. But it's got to be true. Synadia, if they want to change their license, it's their project, and they could fork Nats to another project and continue working on that, and no longer continue the CNCF's Nats project, but the Open Nats, New Nats, whatever Nats, not Nat, Drive project to do it in a closed license form. That would have been totally sad, but.
Or even okay. Not a closed license, just a non-OSI approved, if that's the direction they wanted to do.
I mean, Synadia Nats is open source, so even the people behind Nats are totally in their rights to form a new project, taking the code and doing something with it. That's what open source means. The problem here was they wanted to have it retroactively pushed towards, it never happened. We never donated it. It has always been closed source. So I gave you this pie, I let you eat the pie, and I want my pie back. And you can get the pie back, but it's going to be in different shape and a different color. And that's basically what hit the fan at the point where they tried to do this. This was too far. Because that's where they went really off the rails by really demanding things that they had legally written contracts with the CNCF, that they were giving it both the trademarks and everything. That's how CNCF works. And I see why they do that, to avoid things like that. When you go for a CNCF project, you have to kind of agree that your project is now under the banner of CNCF, and CNCF gets some kind of stewardship behind it. You want to get that back? Well, you can always negotiate and pay a lot of money to do that. Maybe CNCF is open to that. I don't know. Ask DNCF, CNCF, I wouldn't think so. Would. But what United tried to do here, the kind of bait and switch was totally, there is no way to spin this anyway positively.
No.
And this also demonstrates the need for organizations like CNCF, Linux Foundation, Apache, to give open source that stability, because Apache is a little bit less in the news these days, but the reason that these kinds of, how do you call this, organizations, standards, bodies, whatever you want to call them, exist, is to give that stability of not just a project, but more of an ecosystem of projects. And the reason that Synergy had to kind of, reel it in a bit, and, well, that was because they were under that umbrella. So while on the one hand, I don't really like these overarching organizations, because it's a bureaucracy and it will limit innovation a little bit because you are beholden to people somehow. The other side of the coin, the stability that it offers, I think does really make up for that potential negative there. And win for open source. And Synergy needs to do some, so putting some paint on the blemishes there, because this was not a good move.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you live and you learn, hopefully.
So what do you think? In the next 5 to 10 years, are we going to crack this, the secret behind how to make open source profitable?
I think it is unlikely.
Well, Fusion first or open source first?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Cold Fusion for sure. Yeah. I mean, just my only final thoughts on this really is that we've talked a lot over the last handful of episodes on this, but there is absolutely, and I fully acknowledge this, there's a lot that we don't know about what was going on. I deliberately did not want to put anyone in an awkward position. We did this purely looking at externally available public data. I am absolutely positive that the reality is a lot more complex than the picture that we've been painting. And again, final disclaimer, I'm an idiot. I know nothing. Opinions are my own. Data is what I found on the internet, et cetera, et cetera.
And we also didn't want to hit on HashiCorp here in any way. It's just that they are at a time where they kind of went not full circle, but they went through the whole stages, and there was enough information on the internet available that it made a good case study. Yeah, but it is not definitely, because they are so different from others, because this same cycle has been happening over and over again with different companies for the last 10, 15 years. So was just a nice case study which had enough information and was at the right time and place to form a discussion around.
Indeed, absolutely. All right, well, unless there's anything left from you, Jon?
No, still waiting how we get that million from being a podcast thing happening, but I guess...
But maybe Bloop Industries will bail us out. Probably not. Well, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can see our little faces there and comment and do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send any or all feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Profitability is Freedom Dave.
And my name is Blueberry.
Is that the pie? And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.